Republicans to wake up is... The Republican Party right now is not led by conservatives. There's a population out there that has to be told the truth. We have to do it live!
Now, from the left coast, it's another podcast edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Peter B. is curious, opinionated, and relentless in pursuit of the truth like a honeybee drawn to pollen. He's an independent progressive, ready to sting Republicans and Democrats alike when they deserve it. After years in commercial radio, Peter B. welcomes you to this audio adventure in news and politics with no corporate filter. Listeners support this program, and you can help at peterbcollins.com. Here's your humble host, Peter B.
I am grateful to individuals who subscribe to this program and help pay my bills. Lauren Howard, Christopher Welsh, James Swift, Justin Perkig, just to mention a few.
Only fools rush in, but I can't help falling in love with you.
Today's podcast, I think, is special. A couple of days ago, I witnessed something that I consider remarkable. A group of elders of the Presbyterian Church, who represent churches in the western region, particularly here in Northern California, were meeting and poised to issue a formal rebuke of the Reverend Janie Spar. Rebuked for conducting same-sex marriage ceremonies. And as you'll hear, the Reverend Janie Spar believes that it's all about love. And that's why I couldn't resist pulling out a little Elvis music to get us started here today. And a couple of comments before you hear some powerful and what I consider to be very inspiring voices. The Reverend Janie Spar appeared on our program last August, and she explained the situation. She was being disciplined by a judicial council of the Presbyterian Church. And during that podcast, she explained some of the issues there, some of which you'll hear her comment on in just a moment. But I, as somebody who is not religious, and I'm recovering from my Catholic upbringing, and I, as you'll hear me explain to the Reverend Spar, I believe in the message of Jesus Christ. I believe it's been corrupted by humans on earth, many of whom who claim to be embracing him and his message, and who claim to be more righteous than many of the rest of us. And when this group gathered, as you'll hear in the interviews, which were all conducted before the vote was taken, and I'll prevent the suspense, the presbytery rejected the report and the requirement to rebuke the Reverend Janie Spar. This sets up a conflict with the national hierarchy of the Presbyterian Church USA, and we will continue to cover these issues as they move forward. But Janie Spar was not expecting this. I talked to her after the vote was taken, and she was quite surprised that her fellow Presbyterians had found the work that she has done with gays and lesbians, her own witness as a lesbian woman, and the whole thrust of her ministry, this group found it to be within, I think, the message of Jesus Christ. They didn't find it to be within the Constitution of the Presbyterian Church USA, and that's where the conflict will proceed to play out. And so I have to say that it gave me a sense of inspiration and gratification to see very serious religious people gather and consider the importance of ministering to all people, and that gays and lesbians are not second-class citizens, they are not second-class worshipers in a particular religious group. Now, before we get started with the interviews, you're going to hear Janie Spar, and some of her friends and supporters. I referenced during my comments with Reverend Spar the song you're about to hear. And in particular, I want you to listen for the phrase connubial narcs, because that seemed to amuse her when I quoted it to her. This is Roy Zimmerman and the song Defenders of Marriage. Yes, defending the institution from people who want to get married. Take a listen.
Every time we think about same-sex marriage, it makes us sick to our guts. I mean, to people who want to commit to a stable, monogamous, lifelong relationship, what are they, nuts? It's unnatural. Now, a man should not lie with a person who is a guy. He should only lie to his wife. The Bible is clear. We're defenders of marriage in three-button suits. We'll raise our double standard and see who salutes. Defenders of marriage, defending the institution against people who want to get married. Every time we think about same-sex parents, oh my gosh, we exclaim. I mean, to people who want to provide a protective and nurturing family environment, have they no shame? It's so deviant. It's the Lord's holy word, as my second wife said to my third, that a family's based on obligation and fear. We're defenders of marriage, connubial narcs, ever vigilant and patriotic patriarchs. Defenders of marriage, defending the institution against people who want to get married.
There's more to the song. You can find it at royzimmerman.com or pay 99 cents and download it from iTunes. Now to our conversations, first with the Reverend Spar, then Jim Rigby, a pastor from Austin, Texas, who I was really touched by. Then you'll hear Sarah Taylor, who is an attorney and brings a combined religious and legal perspective to these issues, and the Reverend Ray Bagnolo from New York, who came to California to speak up for Janie Spar, and he says flatly he wouldn't be alive today if she had not touched his life. Then you're going to hear Janie's ex-husband and his current wife, Jim Spar, and his current wife, Jackie Spar. And I think that their comments are also quite remarkable. And following that, you will hear the formal resolution that was adopted by the Presbytery meeting here in California this week that basically defies the Constitution of the Presbyterian Church, and then the vote taken to adopt that very resolution. I hope that you will find this as rewarding as I did in attending and witnessing this important event this past week.
We're here with the Reverend Janie Spar at the Presbyterian Church in San Anselmo, and you're going to face some music today, Janie. Tell me about it.
Yes, today is the day that the Presbytery is to read the decision from the General Assembly Permanent Judicial Commission, which essentially affirms the rebuke of this presbytery, or the Presbytery Permanent Judicial Commission.
So you are being sanctioned for performing same-sex marriages.
Right, right. And the ones that were listed, there were some 16, and there were 11 that testified before the Presbytery Permanent Judicial Commission. Mm. Yeah.
Now, I find you serene, actually kind of upbeat. Tell us what's going on inside.
Well, inside, I've known this presbytery a long time. I have many, many friends here. We've worked together, those that agree and those that disagree. We've done lots of work together. So I've known these folks a long time. I think, Peter, for me, what is the great concern is that I don't feel like so much that I'm being rebuked, but I feel like all the couples that I married, again, it's this second-class business, and that to me is violence.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel that any sanction, any rebuke does harm to all those marriages, to all those folks that have loved one another, and I feel it embraces a system of oppression.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping that this presbytery will not go along with this rebuke. I think it is, as I said, when you say no to people who have taken so seriously, you know, for LGBT people to come to the church and to come to me and ask to be married, do you know what they have to work through to do that? And I think we should all say, thank you so much. Thank you so much for still trusting that we can offer blessing and support to you. So for me, the church would be the first place that opens its doors and says, come and be with us and wonderful. And you know, I meet with these couples for years. Some of them I've met with for 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I know them. They're my friends. I mean, I've done their commitment ceremonies. I've been with their babies. I've been with, you know, all these families and so on. Some of these couples have been together 24 years, 20 years. So I don't know if consciously people know this is an act of violence. To rebuke me is really not to rebuke me. It's to rebuke these amazing couples and call us second class. And that's never acceptable, and it should never be acceptable in the Church of Jesus Christ.
Well, and I regard the Presbyterian Church as one of the most progressive and advancing social justice and human rights fundamentals. And I am a recovering Catholic. I'm unchurched.
Right.
But I respect the teachings of Christ and people who embrace them.
Right.
And this is so inconsistent. And the other thing that comes to mind is judge not, lest ye be judged.
Right. And I think there are so many, of course, in this presbytery who feel exactly like you do. And there are so many here that have, that stand for, like I said, there's so many justice issues. And if we could see this as one of the many justice issues that the church can embrace. But because so many churches have not done their good work around sexuality and spirituality, then we get somehow or other, it's okay somehow to say no. You know, it's still put in the behavioral realm somehow, rather than an identity. Mm-hmm. It's our very being we're saying no to.
Yeah.
When you say no to lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, very identity who God has made them.
Because of the religious aspects, in the secular world, this is treated with great deference and euphemism.
Right.
Last week, after President Obama made his change, the public television news hour said that on our website, we have a map that shows where the issue of same-sex marriage resonates. And what that is a map of where the bigots are and where bigotry lives. And that is defended as a matter of religious freedom. And I find it not only intellectually incoherent, but offensive from the point of view of the message of Christ.
Exactly. Exactly. And I, again, just exactly what you're saying, it is against the faith that I know. That is not the Jesus I know. That isn't the church that I know. So all we're doing is we're asking the church to be the church of Jesus Christ, which says all are welcome. There's no little asterisk that says only you people. You know, mm-hmm. It's for everybody. But we're also treated, though, as though not only are we less than, that somehow or other our relationships just don't count as much. And I take us back when we talked before about the first unions done out of love and not property were gay in the Middle Ages. And from the 3rd to the 14th century, that was being done in the Vatican. And we have the material and the resources from that. So I just think, oh, come on, this is my... And, you know, when I meet with couples, isn't it we're saying gay couples are any better than heterosexual? We're not saying, we're saying people who dare to love one another and want a healthy relationship should have as much support as possible, because you and I know every relationship goes through. It's up, it's downs, it's sideways, it's all the things that it goes on. So when you have family and friends and church around you to support you through those up and down times, yay! You have a chance of having this amazing life together of intimacy in the ups and downs. And that's where the church should be first. And there are many people here who feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
Many.
There's a satirical song called Defenders of Marriage that refers to the righteous as connubial narcs. And I wanted to get your thoughts because perhaps you would be uncomfortable with me singling out an individual, but I will. A Rush Limbaugh or a Newt Gingrich, these multiply married guys who nonetheless claim that they are defenders of the institution of marriage. And there is so much hypocrisy about this that it often is overlooked. It's taken as just the background. How do we deal with these conflicting messages where we have a president who has finally come forward and spoken up for the rights of all individuals, and yet the forces of repression are gathering momentum at the same time?
I know. Well, I think for me, look what President Obama said. He said, I know these people. They're on my staff. And he and Michelle, if you watch them, Obama, they understand relationship. I have never had anyone who understands great intimacy ever say to me, Janie, what you're doing is wrong. I don't know. I can't speak for other people, the Rush Limbaughs and so on, like that, but I can say that when people do serious, deep loving, I don't know of people who would not want that for me. You know, who have done deep work, heterosexual, whatever their sexual orientation. And I would want for Rush Limbaugh and for Newt Gingrich, I would want for them to know that deep intimacy, to love that, to be so loved by another. You know, and who knows what has happened in their past or their lives that brings them to that. I mean, God only knows what happens to people to dare to love another with all the stuff, the baggage that we come with, maybe from family or whatever that may be. So I don't want to be judgmental back on them. Yep. What I want to do is say, God, give us a chance. Come know us. Come see who we are. Come be with me for a week. Come and meet, you know, Beth and J.E. and Susie and Lenore, you know, come and meet Jeff and David. And, you know, when I listened to the testimony, and which Tom got so much for us on video, when you listen to the testimonies of Lisa and Renna and Ed and them, you know, and I just think of like when Ed and Tom came and said, you know, do you know what it is for us? They said for us to come publicly here. We do things in our community. Our neighbors love us. Our friends love us. Our family celebrates us. They were all there, by the way, at their wedding that we did. And they said, but we have to come here to a church and tell you this? It's like, why don't you know this? You know. And so I think, again, the dissonance. What I find out inside, it's like, there's a dissonance. Somehow they don't make the connection between people and polity or people and rules. It's like, but what if the rules are wrong? What if they're outdated? What if they don't make sense anymore? I mean, and this is what we're coming to say. These rules make no sense. Mm-hmm. I do the same homework I do for heterosexual people as I do for LGBT people. Do the same homework, only I'm even harder on our own because of the oppressive system, because I know what they're going to be up against. So I ask them what's wonderful about being lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, hetero. What's hard about it? What's great about it? You know, and you hear, it's when I can't say, when I can't be fully me to my family and so on. I mean, that's violence.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one of the reasons I stay here. I want to stop the violence. Education helps.
So this can be seen as the dynamic between acceptance and rejection. And you're being dealt a message of rejection for your acceptance of all people.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do we deal with that?
Well, I think, let me just say, because it's interesting. At first, the church didn't want me to say that I was lesbian. So I came out, and the church has dealt with it as best they could. And we've learned together to be together. Now, in marrying, they asked me not to be a pastor. Do you see this? No, 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 no. I was called to ministry. I was affirmed by the people. I was affirmed by this presbytery. I was affirmed. So don't ask me. Now, it's okay that I'm lesbian now, but that I can't perform? No, no, no. The dissonance, there's something terribly off. And that's what we're trying to get at. So today, even in saying, even if they should be supportive of me, if a rebuke stands, it says no to these couples. It says no, it's not the same as. It says no to our love, no to who we are. Not acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Not acceptable in the Church of Jesus Christ.
As you faced this church court, so to speak, did you feel that your judges were conflicted and that they...
All up along the lines, because it went along the way. Sure. Sure, it is conflicting when you meet Tom and Ed and Lisa and Brenda and, you know, all these people, and you meet all these couples and you hear their stories. I could see even people who disagreed. I mean, there were moments, I mean, Tom can talk about this, where people wept. How do I make sense of this? You know, how do I make sense of these rules? But I guess and their thing was, we feel constrained, you see. So we'll send it up and surely they'll do better. But what happens is when you send a guilty verdict up, the court's there just to affirm whether you did the process right or not.
Mm-hmm.
You see? And that was the sadness. That
so it's just like the civil courts. There's no real room for a new finding of fact. It's simply about the technical issues?
Well, the GAPJC really took some of the presbyteries. General Assembly Permanent Judicial Commission is the highest court,
okay.
And you look at what's gone on and so on like that. But there was a healthy dissent in the highest court that said, you know, essentially this is hypocrisy.
Mm-hmm.
And that was important to hear. That was the dissent.
And so what does it take to change this? Does it require a new message from heaven?
Sure. No. The Presbyterian Church has overtures. There's already overtures going up right now before the General Assembly that meets in July. And we'll see what happens there. You have things like authoritative interpretations. But these overtures come forward all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll keep coming forward. Mm-hmm. So because it took how many years for ordination? And finally they said yes to ordination. So you'd think marriage would be easy. But so we're here to help them know how easy it is.
Mm-hmm. And what is your hope? Do you think that ultimately your point of view will prevail?
I think God's point of love and justice will prevail. It isn't my point. It's love and justice that will prevail.
That's the Reverend Janie Spar. Now I would like you to hear a man who I found incredibly powerful and inspirational, the Reverend Mr. Jim Rigby from Austin, Texas.
We're talking with the Reverend Jim Rigby. You're from Texas, and tell me what your attitude is toward this disciplinary action against Reverend Janie Spar.
I've been at several of the hearings where Reverend Spar was on trial, and it just seems to me this is an opportunity for this presbytery to live out what their highest values are. I found it very distressing when people said that they believe she did the right thing, when they said that she did the thing that Jesus would have done and that Scripture calls us to do, and then voted against her. I mean, to me, if I speak today, what I will say, and I have to be very careful because I'm from someplace else and it's not my neck in the noose, but I don't understand that. I don't understand why you think that what you believe is enough and that when somebody's in danger's way, you step back.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand that. I don't understand how people can sleep at night. I mean, to me, it was so disturbing when the moderator of one of the hearings read from Once to Every Soul and Nation, as well as it's Once Every Man and Nation, but to make it non-sexist to say Once Every Soul and Nation, which is a call to prophetic courage in times of risk and danger. when there is no hiding place, there is no neutral ground. They quoted from that and then violated everything the poem talks about. And it's that dissociation that I don't understand. It makes me sick. I'd rather be talking to a bigot who knows he or she is a bigot than somebody who's doing the same thing and yet speaking this high rhetoric. Mm-hmm. I do not understand it.
Now, I would call that hypocrisy.
Well, you know, at some point, if you're aware of it, it certainly is. It seems almost like a psychotic break to me. Mm-hmm. It's like people who don't have the courage of their convictions and are more concerned to receive the approval of the oppressor than to be allies to the oppressed. They're so afraid of getting the same wrath that they even act. I mean, it's like they minimize the wrath and act like people aren't in true danger, mm-hmm. but they don't have the courage to stand up and say what they believe or live what they believe.
Mm-hmm. So how do we break through this? Because Reverend Spahr was just describing that she saw how conflicted people were in these roles as playing judge of her behavior. And yet they seem constrained by outside approval and by a dated interpretation of biblical teaching.
I think the Bible has very little to do with this. People, when you read any text with a prejudice, it's, you know, what you believe is going to pop out at you. And the hypocrisy is a very good word for people who take out of the cleanliness codes of the Old Testament, out of these Levitical codes that none of us live by, none of us. Anybody that says they're living by it is a liar if they're not an Orthodox Jew. And yet, because they have a prejudice, they keep one strand of that code. And the only people on God's earth that they use it against are gays and lesbians. So to me, it's like when you can see that's not right and you give lip service to a higher understanding of the text and yet you don't cross the river. I mean, to me, that's the key. If you don't cross the river, it really doesn't matter what you believe. And I don't believe Janie Spahr's on trial here. I haven't believed that for years. This Presbyterians on trial, because they've already said that their highest value and their high, if they're true to their highest value, that they will support what she's done. Mm-hmm. So if they don't support what she's done, that means that they have betrayed themselves. Mm-hmm. So to me, this is a last chance for this presbytery. If they vote to rebuke, that will be an act of violence, not only against Janie Spahr, but it'll be an act of violence against their own conscience. So that's, I mean, if I can figure out a good way to say that in 2 minutes. The Presbyterian Church was based on right of conscience, and that's been thrown overboard. That if you look at our founding documents, no one has a right to surrender their conscience because a religious council tells them to. That's what the Reformation was about. It wasn't about being Catholic. It was about being bully. Mm-hmm. And what we've done is we've left the Catholic Church and then built the same sort of hierarchy of power, and it's even worse because there's nobody responsible for it.
And Mr. Rigby, this is one of my fundamental issues, is that the message of Jesus has been corrupted by the humans who attempt to honor him in running institutions on the earth.
It drives you crazy. It really does. The worst enemy of the gospel is the church of Jesus Christ. I mean, we do more to betray Jesus than any atheist has ever done in their entire life, or any group of atheists has.
So what keeps you inside?
Well, people like Janie, the belief that if we lose mainstream churches to bigotry, that there are people who will be in harm's way. Mm-hmm. I still have some kind of sick hope for my denomination that they'll do the right thing. But I will not cooperate in the oppression of another. So I will not be a good colleague to other presbyters who do not give full human rights to all persons.
So does that portend the possibility of a schism of some sort?
Well, the schism's already there. And, you know, I have some hopes for healing that, but not at the cost of human rights. Mm-hmm. So if there's some way we can build a bridge, that'll be great. But I'm not a oppressing people just so the bigots don't get angry.
And what is your view of the secular dynamics now, with President Obama making a pronounced shift on the rights of same-sex individuals to marry, and the backlash that that has produced from fundamentalists and from political opponents? Do you see this as a breakthrough, or is it going to lead to a hardening of the traditionalists?
Well, I don't know, obviously, but... What breaks my heart is that through history, the church has always been the last one to get on board of any human rights struggle. So you've got the Marines that figured this out before the Presbyterian Church has. Now, to me, when the Marines are more sensitive to a human rights issue than we are, then we're in the wrong business. We should have been selling encyclopedias or something. I mean, we can't get that. And it's always been that way. I mean, we like to pretend like we were right there with Dr. King, but he wouldn't have written the letter from the Birmingham jail if the white churches had supported him in the way we remember ourselves to have done. So to me, it's like what's happened is, and you know, I can trace it historically, is when Constantine came in and gutted the ethical demands of the Sermon on the Mount and replaced it with the creeds. Then what you had was something that's very serviceable to empire, and that's what we've got left, and that's what we've got to destroy. We've got to destroy the institutional church to get the spiritual church back. And part of that has to be done from within.
You really impress me and inspire me. What else would you like to add about these issues and this event today sanctioning Reverend Janie Spahr?
Well, the amazing thing about Janie Spahr is... And I think all of these sort of prophetic leaders on this movement, as an ally, it's an honor to be in the same room with them. But they so transcend this denomination. This is, for them, it's about everybody. And it's they want to use the attacks against them to teach principles, which is to me very Gandhian. It's like you don't go into the struggle to eliminate an enemy. You go to illumine a principle, and that's Janie Spahr. I mean, I don't care what they do, she'll win every time, over time, because she's going to redefine the terms. This is a group that agrees with her, but does not have the courage of their convictions. My hope is that today will be the day they'll find that courage.
Mr. Jim Rigby, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, sir. It's an honor to be here.
You just heard Reverend Jim Rigby, a pastor from Austin, Texas. Now, two friends and supporters of Janie Spahr, Sarah Taylor, who is an attorney, and the Reverend Ray Bagnolo from New York City.
Joining me now are Sarah Taylor from here in the Bay Area and the Reverend Ray Bagnolo.
Yes, that's right.
You say it the way you say it.
I say Bagnolo.
Okay, Bagnolo. And you are from New York, is that right?
Yes, I am. I serve Yonhus Presbyterian Church and Neighborhood House on East 74th Street in the city.
Uh-huh. And tell me why you are here for the Reverend Janie Spahr.
If it weren't for the Reverend Janie Spahr, I wouldn't be here. So it's very natural for me to be with her at this time in this process of the hearings that have taken place. I met Janie about 15 years ago at a conference, and I came from a different faith tradition. And I happened to stumble into a Presbyterian center in Stony Point, New York, where a conference was taking place, and Janie and others were there. And it was the first time that I had heard anyone within a context of a faith community talking about welcoming people who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender. As a gay person, I had been pretty much in a deep and personal struggle with trying to be who everyone in my first tradition was telling me I needed to be in order to be faithful. And I knew there was something wrong with that, but I couldn't find any voices that helped me to understand that better. And in the process, probably did more violence to myself trying to change than anyone had ever done to me. And then there was Janie, and there were others, Chris Glasser and Joanna Boss, people who were and still are involved in this progressive movement. And for the first time, I thought, wow, you know, maybe there is a place where people understand God the way that I do, understand me from the inside out the way that I do, that I am not the person being described by others, that I have as much of a commitment to God of my understanding and faith and growing in that spiritual life. And there were others who said, well, sure, of course. Come on, honey. And so I did.
So how do you try to reconcile this institutional action by the church with the very personal experience that you just shared in the ministry of Janie Spahr?
With an understanding that there will always be the need for a voice and then voices to bring people along through the changes that have to take place. This is a church. Here's a question I always have. After any great change in social movements or civil rights, the people who were there before, putting themselves out there, accepting the risk, in this case, the risk of being Christian, which I think is inherent in being Christian, in following your beliefs and following the way you believe God and the Spirit is calling you, those people who in many ways are criticized, vilified, punished, rebuked, after the change has taken place, those folks are the ones that are looked up to as the people that really made the difference in opening up not only society, but God's great love and Spirit that others think can be held back, and it can't. So when you ask, how do we reconcile it? I would say that we walk in the Spirit in the way that we know best how to do with one another, and that we don't think of it as being we who are on trial, but the church who is on trial. And it's our role to be a witness so that we can change things, because no one should have to go through the fundamental, what it is to me, is bullying. Nobody should have to go through the bullying of being excluded because of the way that God created them to be. That, if there is sin, if there is a creation of distance between God and humanity, which I believe is what sin means, that's the sin.
Sarah Taylor, tell me your connection to Janie Spahr and what draws you to this internal struggle in the Presbyterian Church. Go ahead and hold that.
Okay. First, it's a little closer. Okay. First of all, I started off as Janie's friend, and I'm a lawyer. And as back in 2004, when she thought she would be charged, she said, "You know, would you do this with me? Would you do this with me?" And I was reluctant, but thinking, "Oh yeah, I will do this with you." And you know, 8 years later, we're here now. And I really want to ask the question about how you can reconcile this. Because I, as a lawyer, don't think you can reconcile it. As a lawyer, there is no constitutional support. There's simply a definition of marriage in our Book of Order that doesn't expand to this, but it doesn't limit it. It doesn't prohibit it. Our Constitution is completely silent on the issue of same-gender marriage. And it's so key for any kind of mandatory prohibition like they've installed here, that there be some prohibition, that there be some reason you can't. And as you probably know, we've just removed the prohibition against serving as a minister in this church. So to me at this point, it's irreconcilable that this church will ordain members who are LGBT people, and yet it will not let its members be married in this church. So if we're going to have such a high bar for people who are able to be married in this church, it seems it should be constitutionally sound. And it should be somewhere within the Constitution that this is prohibited, that this is to be avoided, that there is something wrong, that there is something incompatible with faith. And in fact, the Constitution says at every point that we should be inclusive, that LGBT members should not be discriminated against based on their sexual preference. It says continually that all members shall have all the rights of anyone else within this church. So this decision by both this lower PJC and the upper PJC, it is just, in direct conflict with our Constitution.
And what you're describing there are human constructs that conflict with the fundamental message of Jesus and with basic human rights, that we are all individuals with the same rights.
That's totally correct. And to even be here today to watch this, This is a presbytery that, on the last case, you know, Janie was brought up before, found her innocent. But to be here when this presbytery has not been able to stand with her in the way it has, I can't describe to you what it feels like. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is a simple matter of a mentality within churches sometimes now that think they have to go a certain way, because this is sort of what the church says, that the unity of the church is more important than the morality of decisions and the undertakings of its ministers. So not only are they putting ministers in a real bind here, but they have completely disenfranchised their LGBT members now, who cannot go to their pastor for the most sacred moment of their lives. And I think that's the most disturbing thing, that when we marry, when we choose to whom we're going to be bound, when we decide we're going to wed someone till death do us part, and for the church to miss that opportunity, and not only to miss that opportunity with people, but to deny people that opportunity, it's mind-boggling.
Well, and Ray, the idea of church unity conflicts with the fundamentals of a local religious community. And in my view, a religious community accepts all who want to be a part of it without judgment, knowing that we are all sinners, we are all flawed, and that for one to judge another is fundamentally wrong. So how do we try to sort this out and reach a breakthrough?
We need some common ground, and there's plenty of common ground. The recent decision by the PJC, GAPJC, in the least largest case, which basically said that the Presbytery of San Francisco had not erred in the process or the examination of Lisa and calling her to be prepared to receive a call. In one of the objections, it was a unanimous decision that threw out the objections to the ruling that she had not been, there had been errors in the process. They said, no, the process was fine. Lisa could be called. In some of the comments that followed, there were statements about, from people who disagreed, from people who still believed that it wasn't in their understanding that people who were LGBT could be called to serve as ministers of word and sacrament or teaching elders. And yet they voted unanimously to go with the decision. And I think in that what they were saying is, you know what, enough. We disagree. It is not a reason to separate or to create distance. We can disagree without distance. We have commonality in many more places that are part of the unity of spirit that cannot be divided, but that we have done certain things to separate and change for a whole variety of reasons, which fundamentally is rooted in fear of what people believe is sinful, of what people believe is somehow dangerous, what people believe is different enough to try and avoid, which to me is a description and definition for what discrimination is, bordering on what hate is, an irrational fear of the other. And that, if anywhere that can be addressed, if anywhere that can be reconciled, and I agree with Sarah that, you know, reconciliation is something far above in God's hands. But if there is any place where such things can be addressed and where reconciliation can be approached, it's in a church. It should be in a place where people can be welcomed on their path. And that the unity of the church is in opening the doors wide so that all those who seek God can be welcomed, and that being lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender is no reason to exclude anybody. It is more an indication of how we have yet learned to love one another by underscoring the shortcomings we have in our fear and discrimination that really has to be addressed. And I think this whole process, this whole long struggle, is about loving. This is about loving the people who have yet learned to love us. This is about loving the church that has still set up some boundaries to keeping us out. This is about loving one another at such a deep level after we have been tried and excluded and pushed away and have not run but have stayed, that has qualified us in a way to be healers and to carry the message of unity and love and the gospel
in a way that I think eventually will be embraced by all. And there are many, many people here and elsewhere who are friends, supporters, family members, allies. And I want to make sure that we acknowledge who they are and invite them into this process to become actively involved in changing this church into a more welcoming and fully inclusive church for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community. But once you do that, it's not just about one group. Once you do that, you open this church, you make it more welcoming to all. And then the Spirit does what the Spirit does. And that's what's exciting, and that's what we're missing, and that's why we argue. And so it's worthwhile. People sacrifice themselves, they sacrifice their time, they put themselves in the line of criticism and being called names and all sorts of things. You don't do that lightly unless there's something deeply inside that you're committed to, that you believe, and that you know is right. And that's the voice that speaks inside, and that's the call of God, and that's what I think and believe Janie has demonstrated clearly in all the things she has done and created a witness and model for others to follow. So we do our best.
Sarah, can this struggle be won with maximizing love toward the oppressors?
That's a great question. It's interesting to have this conversation between the two of us, because I don't think it can be done. I think that oppression is a systemic issue that is supported by good people in the church who do not understand precisely what's happening. And so I think that if at that level, yes, love can do it, if people can change the hearts and minds of the good people in the church to make them understand what it looks like. But I think that we also have to set in place actions, either constitutionally, legally, in legislation, that take away the power from the bullies or from the oppressors within the church or the administration. I mean, however you want to name the echelons of the church, because we have support at all levels, for sure. But what's that phrase? It's when good people are silent that evil wins. And I don't want to be overstating it, but that is part of what we're involved in right now, is good people who know better have remained silent and have not stood with. And I think that's what I'm talking about in terms of the PJC's decision that's so disappointing this time, is that instead of standing with, those good people need to stand with. And we have asked them, and we will continue to ask them to stand with. It's wholly different than supporting or praising or whatever those other actions are, but we really need somebody to stand with. So I think to end the oppression, those good people can no longer be silent, and they have to stand up, and they have to be counted with the oppressed, if we use that language. They have to be counted on the other side instead of being counted with the majority. Or actually, right now, it's 50-50. It's not even a majority. But no, I think it takes some real legislative action in this church and some real change on the parts of that voices need to be heard that aren't being heard.
Great. Thank you. Yes, please follow up.
I just want to follow up to what Sarah said. Absolutely. We need the legislative change. We need the constitutional change. But you can't legislate the heart. So we need both. We need the legislation to create a situation where we can move forward, and then it has to come from a place of love, and the legislative changes come from a place of love. I know Sarah, I know the deep love and conviction from which she comes in this work that she does. So it's the same love, but because of the conditions and the situation we're in, there we have to bring people together, and we have to bring all of the aspects together of the ways in which we can help to change this. The last thing I will say is that there are times in history, more frequently than I believe we imagine, where there is a moment where great change can take place. There was a moment at the PJC meeting in Napa when all of the couples were there, when that commission could have gone back into the meeting
when they had their deliberation and said, look, this is absolutely wrong. These are faithful, caring, loving people who have just revealed themselves in the deepest mysteries of their relationship to one another that we probably couldn't articulate in our own relationships if we tried. And here they were doing it publicly to take us into their heart. And we know Janie Spahr and her 38 years in service and in her ministry and her pastoral caring and the things she's done enough and could have come out and said, look, the church is wrong. Here's what we want you to do. We're going to find you not guilty. We're going to tell you to go out. You be a pastor to all of those you're called to be pastor to. You honor your ordination vows by pastoring to the LGBT community and all those who call you, and we'll take the heat from the church because the church is wrong. Now you go be a pastor and we'll take care. If the goal of that commission was to move the process along more quickly by their decision, they could have doubled, if not tripled it, to light speed by standing up, as Sarah has pointed out, with the courage of their own convictions and heart, rather than being tied down in the parsing and articulation of certain positions that are written down or relegated to being the rules that need to be followed. This is not about rules. This is about living in concert with one another in agreement, but it is not about rules that can create a violent scenario where we continue to promote and support the damage that is done to others by the way we call ourselves Christian and the practices that we embrace. It's time.
You just heard the Reverend Ray Bagnolo. He is a Presbyterian minister from New York City and an openly gay man, and Sarah Taylor, who is an attorney and a member of the Presbyterian Church.
Joining me now are Jim Spahr and Jackie Spahr. And Jim, you just described yourself as Janie Spahr's husband emerita.
No, I'm her husband emeritus. She's my wife emerita. Let's get this gender stuff correct.
Well, you know, Latin was eighth grade. It's been a long time.
Yes, it has. Yeah, I passed. Barely.
Now, you and Janie were married, and then you supported her when she came out, as I recall. That's how she related it to me.
Well, Jane and I never fell out of love. That didn't happen. We were always, it was just the wrong relationship. Okay. Yeah, she's my sister, not my wife. And that became blatantly obvious when Jackie and I married. And I'd walk up to Jackie, and Jackie would turn to me. Jane might turn away because of the fear of intimacy may follow. Mm. Okay? So I just, you know, learned it's so dramatically different when you're mismatched. Okay? But when you are matched, hey, we're matched.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Jackie, how does all this feel to you? How does it fit into your life, married to Jim, and knowing what Janie's been going through?
Well, Jane and I were friends before Jim and I. And so it's just been a natural extension. I was at the First Presbyterian Church when Jane was there. I was on staff. I was an elder in that church when she was there. And when the first vote came down that they were going to make a rule against ordaining gay and lesbian people, I was there with Janie then. I was outraged. I mean, a lot of people I knew were wonderful Christian people, and that the church would say that they couldn't be ordained was just outrageous. Later, much later, Jim and I married, and we've been with Janie all the way along. She's my sister-in-law.
Mm-hmm. And so, Jim, how do you respond to what the church is doing to punish Janie for responding to her call?
They can't punish Janie. I mean, be real. There's no punishing Janie. What the church is doing is sullying itself. Imagine a black child being worried about being discovered that they're black at church. If you're a gay child at the Novato church that originated these charges that are winding up today, you would be very careful about letting anybody know you were gay. You might put your life at risk if you came out, or if you were a gay child up at First Church Santa Rosa. Okay? These are hostile territory for gay people. Jewish kids don't have to worry about getting thrown out of the synagogue for being Jewish. This is the only group of people in which the primary person that we're speaking of or talking about has a huge risk just being in their own family, in their own church. And we're doing nothing today to help that along. As a matter of fact, Peter Gomes said it years ago, he's a preacher to Harvard, that it's not so much that Christians, you know, are bad people, but when we do things like this, it gives permission to those folks who are a lot less scrupulous than the folks here are to carry out the violence that is carried out. And, you know, we all look back and we think, oh, my golly, Bobby Griffith, how could that be? Or in Petaluma, we had our Robin Reed committed suicide. And aren't those days over? No, they're not. We're still beating transgendered people to death. We are still encouraging lesbian and gay youth to take their own lives or straighten up. And this church is abetting that. And what we're doing today is setting the tone for that. And it is a terrible tragedy which the church will never, ever be able to erase from its history.
And yet you will stay a Presbyterian?
I'm a member of Church of the Roses in Santa Rosa, and I've been there since 2006 now, and I told Jackie the other day, it was a big aha for me, I guess, a couple months ago. My God, I have straight friends. I haven't had straight friends since Jane and I split. I mean, I'd forgotten about that fact of my life because it's so full. But up there, I have straight friends, and one of my friends, Hal, he says, you know, Jim, this is my church. Preachers come, preachers go. Members come, members go. This is my church. That's my church. They love me. They love Jackie, and they show it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm staying.
Yeah. So that makes you an inside agitator.
Yeah, I'll accept that title. I can think of some others that I like better. I'd like to blow them up, you know. You can't do that, of course. But I can walk around and hand out stuff like this that brings the stupidity of what they're doing into the daylight.
And you're referring to a card you handed me that has 10 things you wish the church knew about homosexuality.
If how somebody stimulates their pubic nerve is the needle in your moral compass, you've got a problem. Isn't that good?
That is good.
There's a bunch of them on there like that. Jim Rigby's an outstanding man. He gives voice to what we all think but can't quite put together. He's been by Jane forever for years. All right, he's been in this struggle for years. The people that we meet you can't package this stuff, okay? Jim said when we were down in Austin for the General Assembly trial, the only thing you're going to get out of this is loving friends and knowing you've fought the good fight. Well, boy, I got a pass on loving friends. I mean, they come by the dozens, and they're out there today.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good.
And how do you view in the secular world the changes that are underway? Certainly the polls show every year acceptance of marriage equality is growing. And the president has shown some courage. There's plenty of room to criticize him for waiting so long. But given the circumstances, I'll accept his significant move. But this unleashes other forces of repression. And whether it affects the outcome of the election is much less important to me than whether it leads to a breakthrough and some sort of a shift where these people who are clinging to bigotry and their sense of traditionalism can somehow open their hearts and say, I don't need to be this way. And there's a lot of pushback when the black civil rights movement is used as a model. And I think it's a mistake to try to make them equivalent. But I see the, you know, the rights of the LGBT community as a logical progression in the expansion of civil rights. And so on that level, I think it's a fair connection. But how do we look forward 20 years and hope that we haven't pushed people back into closets?
We have 4 grandchildren. Okay. They're going to be so damned embarrassed about this when they look at their grandparents. They are just going to be humiliated that we did that. Well, our kids aren't, but the peers of our grandchildren are. Our children. When whoever is the first of us to go, we'll have a memorial service at Church of the Roses. Okay? When the second one goes, I'd be really surprised if the family would cross a church threshold for that second memorial service. They've been beat up too badly by the church. We'll have a memorial service. It'll be a religious service. But I doubt that they'll go anywhere near a Presbyterian church. They don't have the strength of a Jane.
And Jackie, what are your thoughts about this?
I think that I think folks are going to die off, and our kids are just wondering, what? What is all this? And the grandkids just don't even want to talk about it. It's just obscene as far as they're concerned. I don't think we're going to go back. I think when we have dust-ups, if you will, it helps. Fence sitters fall off, and it's usually... You know, they're saying, okay, I didn't believe this was a big deal, and I know it is a big deal. So they fall off and they start stepping forward. They maybe don't become activists, but they start saying something when someone, you know, says something stupid. So I think it's all to the good, honestly. You know, people are hurt, yes, but they've always been that kind of thing in order to move forward with civil rights. I'm hoping that this is the end of it here. I'm hoping that our General Assembly is going to... I heard Ray said this isn't about rules. No, it's not, but this is what's got the logjam here. This is about love, and the church is about love, or it's about nothing. So I'm kind of looking forward. I didn't think it would happen in my lifetime, honestly. I mean, it's been a 35-year struggle, and I didn't think it would happen in my lifetime. I think we're close.
You just heard Jim Spahr, who was married to Janie Spahr for many years, and his current wife, Jackie. Jim spoke up very much in support of Janie Spahr during the debate over the resolution. And here is the final portion of the resolution that was presented to this meeting of church elders in California here this past week. And it's presented by the author of the resolution, Scott Clark.
Whereas the decision of August 27, 2010, by its terms, acknowledges and apologizes, first, that the rules of the church are against the gospel, and second, that the decision and review continue the grievous harm, quote, that has been and continues to be done, end quote, by the church to lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people, quote, in the name of Jesus Christ, close quote. Be it resolved that the Presbytery of the Redwoods opposes imposition of the rebuke set forth in the decision dated August 27, 2010. As inconsistent with the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Constitution of the Presbyterian Church USA, and the faithful life of ministry lived out in this presbytery.
Thank you. The ayes have it, 74 in favor, 18 in opposition. The motion passes. Thank you for your time. If you refer back to your...
And there you have it. A remarkable vote, a considerable majority, in favor of Reverend Janie Spahr and rejecting the decision by the judiciary panel to rebuke her for marrying same-sex couples when it was legal here in California. Janie Spahr is a woman who I have great admiration for. She really lives the religious message that she believes in. And I just found it very touching to spend time with her and this group of people this week, and was very pleased to see the way it all turned out. Thanks for listening to this special podcast edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Your comments are always welcome. Drop me an email, peter@peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until